Good afternoon and welcome listeners to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip, brought to you by SimTrainer, the Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training center. We're located at 2031 Dryden Road, just across the street from DP&L. You can visit us on the web at www.sim-trainer.com, or you can give us a call at the office at 937-293-3914. If you would like to get on the show today, feel free to give us a call at 457-1290. That's 457-1290, and we'll be glad to get you in the queue and discuss with you any of your firearms-related interests or concerns. I want to start off today's show by mentioning there's been plenty of newsworthy incidents that pretty much have drawn our attention this past week, and I want to start off today's show talking a little bit about some of the issues raised as a result of the incident that occurred in Oklahoma where three juveniles murdered a young adult who happened to be jogging in the wrong neighborhood, apparently. And preliminary reports from the police department are that the crime was provoked by the individuals being bored. And they engaged in an act where they just drove down the street and shot the guy in the back of the back of the head as they drove by. They murdered him at roadside. The reason I bring it up is there's a lot of issues here. First of all, as we mentioned, the juveniles, they were all under 18 years of age, were the assailants. Well, number one, they shouldn't have guns. How they got guns, we don't know yet because the information's not out. But we know they shouldn't have gotten guns. People who are quick to start analyzing situations without all the facts, in this particular case, I happened to be watching an interview the other night on Fox News of a Democratic strategist who the Fox News reporter was talking to about the element of race. We know for sure that the victim in this case was white, and at least two of the three assailants were black, and uncertain as to the third individual. They've not mentioned a whole lot about him. But nonetheless, there's been a lot of discussion about the impact of race in this particular case, which I think it's misdirected. It's misdirected because even if race is a motivating factor here, we're talking about murder one. We're talking about premeditated murder on the part of the people who committed the act. So no matter what their thought process was, whether they didn't like white people or they didn't like people who jog on the right side of the street, whatever the case might be, let's just stick strictly with the race issue, whether it was a race-related matter, it really has no bearing on the ultimate charge. Now, I will tell you that in the criminal justice system, the courts sometimes use racially motivated rationale when they enhance charges and or when they enhance sentencing. But you got to understand, in this particular case, premeditated murder, they're looking at the maximum penalty allowable by law, either death or life in prison. Now, I don't know how it's going to play out. And obviously, these individuals are innocent until proven guilty. But the point I want to make is let's take the issue of race off the table in cases like been in the media over the last year that have gotten so much attention. And let's focus on the real issues here. And in this particular case, it was premeditated murder, period. End of conversation, based on the facts that we know right now. Let's just kind of set those issues aside, because what's happening is people are focusing on race as if it means something substantially in the investigation case, or in the investigation of the case, or in the outcome of the case. And it's going to have very little impact on the overall investigation or on the outcome. But yet that's what the mainstream media tends to focus its time and effort on. And it's ill-advised.
Was this person injured or killed? Did you do it? Were you involved? Those are the only questions that really matter at that point. And unfortunately, this whole political firestorm that has been ginned up by the industry that survives on division is not making it any easier for the prosecutors to do their job, and it's not any easier for the police to do their job. And it's actually creating a situation where you have people that are mentally making an excuse for bad behavior because of whatever other conditions that gives them, quote, permission, unquote, to act in a particular way.
That's right.
And that's a serious problem.
Yes, it is. And it's continuing to kind of water down the issue. And in the interview the other night, when the Fox commentator asked the individual to comment on this. His first comments, and you're not going to believe this, actually, it stunned me. His first comment was, she asked him directly, what do you think about this case in Oklahoma relative to whether race was involved? And he goes, well, let's drop back an issue and let's talk about gun control. This is really about gun control. And then he said, obviously, background checks would have made a difference and gun control would have made a difference. And my first reaction was, first of all, he obviously didn't know what he was talking about the facts and the of the situation and or the relevancy of gun control to this matter or any other matter. And he was way off base when he talks about background checks, because these were juveniles who would not have been subjected to the background check system.
Well, they wouldn't have been able to go to a store and get a gun.
It wouldn't have impacted one bit. It wouldn't have impacted one bit. But because he had a microphone in front of him and he had his scripted agenda, which we know now, the playbook's out there. And
it's
we've been talking
on our
to
website.
You about the preventing gun violence through effective messaging. You got to read it. And Jim Irving of the Buckeye Firearms Association has so eloquently spelled out the arguments that are presented here and the hypocrisy and the I don't know how to describe it, Mark. It's idiocracy, if that's such a word, but it's absolute craziness.
It is a religion.
It's craziness. Yeah. Okay, it's craziness what's going on. But in this particular interview, the guy was way off base and he did not have a clue. And the commentator, who I thought was pretty calm initially, she said, wait a minute. Let's get right to the facts here. Let me understand that. Let's let the audience understand that background checks would have had no bearing here. And this is not a discussion on gun control. Now, as the situation plays out, more facts will become known. And I suspect within a short period of time that after action report, which is another topic we'll talk about later on, will be released. And we'll find out exactly how, through the investigative process, these individuals acquired the firearm or firearms that they used in the commission of this crime. Now, we already know they obtained it illegally some way, mm-hmm. whether they took it from somebody else's home or they illegally took it from a legitimate member of their family's home, whatever the case was, no matter what, they were in possession of the firearm illegally. And that's where there's going to be some...
With illegal intent.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. There's going to be some facts forwarded and we'll know that information. But for purposes of the discussion right now, I want people to understand this is not about race. Whether or not they determine whoever they is that race was a factor, this is about premeditated murder of an individual who was innocently jogging down a neighborhood street and he was killed because the kids were bored. It's a tragic
or
case.
Or whatever their rationale was.
It's a tragic case. Yes. And what I want to say is, you know, when we talk about the Zimmerman Trayvon Martin case and we hear so much in the media about race, in this particular case, the preliminary information and some of the facts known substantively have more of an indication that race might have been related than the Zimmerman case. But beside the point, both cases need to be considered on the facts and circumstances, the totality of the circumstances, and then render a decision. So let's just wait and see how that plays out. But it's just another example how the certain aspects of the mainstream media want to take every horrific situation and turn it into a political agenda.
If you'd like to get in on this conversation, give the studio a call at 457-1290 and we'll get you up on the board. We do have some folks who've called in already, so let's go right out to the phones. Talk to Bobby, who's calling from Englewood. Bobby, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you guys?
Fine, thanks. How can we help you today?
Got a question for you. I just picked up an FMP-45 and I was wondering if that's a good gun for home defense.
It's absolutely a good gun for home defense as long as you are an experienced shooter and you're going to commit yourself to practicing with it. Is this your first gun or have you been a firearms enthusiast for a long time and had several guns?
I've been a firearms enthusiast for a long time and I practice regularly.
Okay, well then you're in good shape because as long as you practice with the 45 is just as good a round as the other rounds out there. I mean, the 9 and the 40 and the 45 and the 38 and the 380, they all do what they're supposed to when you hit your target. And hitting your target is more a product not of caliber as it is of practice with the gun and understanding the functional operation and being able to efficiently handle the gun rather than caliber. So as long as you practice on a regular basis, you're in good shape, and that's a good gun.
Let me ask you what type of trigger does this particular one have?
This has the decocker and the safety where you can carry it in cocked and locked, or you can decock it.
Okay.
Double action.
Right. And what I'd strongly recommend that you do is practice decocked and unlocked so that you learn that double action first trigger, and then all you have to do when you go to use it is pull the gun out of the holster and pull the trigger. The first trigger pull is going to be longer and A little heavier, and then the follow-up triggers will be shorter and lighter, but that is the preferred method to carry that firearm or any firearm that has a decocker.
And I have to add that FN is in the top tier of quality firearms, but the biggest thing, as Mark mentioned, if you practice that first round double action and successive round single action, instead of just going to the range, firing the first round double action, then the next 12, 15 rounds single
action. Or even worse, cocking the hammer
like people. You don't want to get into that situation, because under stressful situations, you don't want to be doing fine motor skill movements, and that would require fine motor skill movement. One other thing I will add, just to your advantage, I believe FN is offering a rebate for anybody that purchases an FN between, I think it's August 19th and August 29th. There's a $20 or $25 rebate, so check their website and or the dealer that you got the gun from, and you should be able to get that if you can show proof of purchase.
Great. My only concern was because I have kids in the house, should I be using hollow point ammo in the gun? Or?
Well, you should be using hollow point ammo because that's the most effective self-defense round. And then the fact that you have kids in the house just means it's all the more reason for you to keep it in a holster on your hip rather than leave it somewhere. All of the rounds, regardless of hollow point or full metal jacket, will travel through walls. So you need to know what's beyond the wall that you're shooting at, but it's your house, and so you get to choose. That's the advantage of home defense.
Absolutely. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling the show. Let's very quickly go out before we get to our first break and talk to Lynn, who's calling from Dayton. Lynn, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks a lot. First of all, I wanted to just piggyback on what you were talking about, the race issue. I'm a black American, African-American, and so my brother spent 27 years in law enforcement, and I remember he had a shootout. He shot a guy, and the guy pulled the gun on him, he shot him. And they spent weeks just talking about, we have French names, so they spent weeks just talking about white officer shoot black suspect. And finally they found out my brother was black, and everything dropped. I mean, as far as the race issue, no more news or anything like that. So they do spin that thing a lot.
It's unfortunate, and thanks for speaking out on that, because until we collectively as society recognize that the race that we are is called human, we're going to have problems.
Absolutely. My question was with the Illinois' current law status. As a CCW carrier, can we go through there, stop at restaurants and things like that, or what's the status?
Well, the answer is yes and no. You can go through there as long as you stay in your vehicle. You can just keep the gun in a holster on your hip. If you get out of the vehicle, then their concealed carry laws, all of their laws apply, and in order to go into a restaurant, you would have to have an Illinois license, and they do have an out-of-state license available. But as far as being able to just drive through the state, you're able to do that. We need to take our first break for the hour. Lynn, thanks very much for calling the show. If you'd like to be on the show, call the studio at 457-1290. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290 News Talk Radio WHIO.
Welcome back to the show, and if you'd like to get in on the show today, please give us a call at 457-1290, and we'll get you in the queue. I mentioned there were plenty of newsworthy articles this last week that obviously we were interested in. I want to direct our listeners' attention to, in Monday's Dayton Daily News, one of the headlines was Ohio is high in gun thefts, and the article talked about the number of guns that are stolen in criminal acts, and it just happened that in the a period they analyzed, I believe it was in 2011, there were 6,860 guns that were stolen. And there was a big, kind of a big emphasis on the fact that that ranked seventh in the United States. Well, what they really don't mention is that from a population standpoint, we're sixth in the United States. So it's not unusual that we would have a requisite number of firearms.
So that was just based on the total number of firearms?
Total number of firearms stolen.
Not firearms per person, not firearms per 100,000 residents or anything like that?
Right, right. Now, again, the article did have some pretty interesting information that it delivered. And of particular interest was several people commenting that stolen guns account for much of the gun violence and gun crimes. And
no
that's
question.
What people need to understand. As I mentioned earlier.
You mean criminals get guns by doing criminal
isn't
things?
Isn't that amazing? Huh. Isn't that amazing? How can it happen? But as in the Oklahoma case, people who can't get guns, the only way they can get them, since they can't pass background checks, which are in effect, in which the overwhelming majority of dealers are totally in compliance with, those people have to resort to illegal means, whether getting them on the black market, having straw purchasers purchase them illegally for them, or stealing them in other criminal acts. Now, the one thing I want to mention there is there was a reference to the fact that many of those guns were stolen from places like underneath somebody's car seat or the back seat of their car or in their garage on a desk. And come on, people, let's be gun ownership requires responsibility and reasonableness. We know that. And you can't be leaving these things lay around where they're fair game to anybody that might break into your car with the initial intention of stealing a few dollars in change or some cigarettes or a GPS positioning device. If they find the gun, they're going to take it. And that puts you in a real bad situation because, number one, you have to report it in the state of Ohio. You have to report it.
And you better. You want to.
That's exactly right. You want to do that. And even though it's you might feel bad about it, it's your legal duty to report it, and it's just the right thing to do. And the article mentions that several states don't have mandatory reporting processes. Well, those states need to take care of that, but I'm just telling you that the lack of reporting stolen guns is less a problem than the people that steal guns. But when you have guns that are unsecured in your residence, in your vehicle, or other places where they're stored, it's just irresponsible, plain and simple. I'm not gonna try to soften the blow. It's pretty simple and obvious.
Yeah, that's just it. And it is. It's kind of unfortunate. I think a lot of people think that they're doing something useful by having a gun in the garage and having a gun in the car and next to their chair and in all these different places. And to some extent, there is an argument to be made for that. The problem is, if you even once leave your garage door open, and I mean, I don't do that on purpose, and I try to be pretty careful about it, but you only have to forget one time, and somebody comes in and sees the garage and then finds the gun in there. Or if you don't lock your car one time, or even if you do lock your car, it's not that tough to get into them. So that's just not the place to be storing firearms.
And I noticed this last week, the National Shooting Sports Foundation is making a pitch to try to get some federal funding to help substantiate the funding of their Project ChildSafe, which helps individuals purchase and or acquire free of charge gun locks and gun safes. And so that's something that I think that if we'd better spend our money on that rather than on some of the other gun control measures that have been proposed that are going to have little no effect.
Yeah, we're going to need to take a break here at the bottom of the hour, go over to Christina Casals over in the news center and get an update on what's going on. But if you'd like to be part of the show, and we do have someone on the phone, so we'll get to you after the break. So call the studio at 457-1290 during the break, and we'll get you up on the board as well. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290. News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Cam Edwards from NRANews.com, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip, and let's go right back out to the phones. And we'll talk to Nick, who's calling from Springboro. Nick, welcome to the show.
Thanks, gentlemen. How are you?
We're doing fine. How can we help you today?
I'm new to the firearms world and actually do a show as well. And
well, thanks for joining us.
It's great to be on the show. My son and I, he's 13, have just started to go out and practice with our guns, and I have a little bit of a concern with lead exposure, especially in indoor ranges, and how concerned should I be? And if I should be, what kind of things can I do, you know, while I'm there and after I'm there to curtail the that exposure.
Two very good questions. What should you do while you're there, and then what should you do after you're there are two separate issues. While you're there, just reasonable activity such as do not avoid reasonable things like some people think bringing a bottle of water or food into the range with them is a good idea. You just don't want to be ingesting things, digesting things while you're in the range. Now, got to understand that in most indoor ranges, and I'll use SimTrainer as an example, the only exposure you as an end user typically have is from the small particles of lead dust that comes out the end of the gun when the gun's being fired. Okay,
because most of that comes from the primer.
And most of that comes from the primer because most of the bullets are totally jacketed or at least partial jacketed, and there's nothing that happens to them until they're encapsulated in the trap. So from that standpoint. The biggest issue at indoor ranges is the lead exposure of instructors like myself and Mark and my other staff members who are out there for prolonged periods of time, especially when we go downrange to some of our advanced training, and then, you know, just continual exposure over longer periods of time. But typically for the recreational shooter, the hobbyist or whatever the case might be, you don't have a whole lot to worry about personally. The other thing you can do after you're done is make sure you wash your hands. And they recommend that you wash your hands with cold water. That way, any lead that might be there won't be absorbed into your skin when you put hot water on your skin and it opens up the pores and then it's absorbed in. Where most of the lead problems have evolved in years past, and that's pretty much what they rely on when they talk about lead in indoor ranges, is actually people who used to melt their own lead to make bullets. And many of us, and I'm going to say I was included in that in the early days, where we would just do it wherever, and we didn't always have the best ventilation, and we were breathing in that the residue that came off of the molten lead, and that wasn't good. And then there were other things that we did when we were on the range out of
Cleaning out the trap, for example.
Yeah, we would just go grab our brass and pick stuff up and throw it in the buckets. And that's another thing we tell people to do. Don't touch the spent brass. Just sweep it up with the brooms, put it into the box, and you're going to be good. Because most of your stays are going to probably be limited to a half hour to 60 minutes at most. So it's really not a big problem for the user. It's more a concern for others.
Well, no extreme, like, you know, I should just have these clothes are used for the range, and I mean, I don't have to do anything like that.
No, you certainly can take precautions if you want to and wear a shirt, you know, and then when you get home, you can change. But what we found is that's not an issue.
Yeah, that
one really, really, really quick one.
Sure.
When you said that the exposure would come from the barrel and the bullets flying out of it, so a revolver wouldn't be any more. I don't want to.
Well, you have a gap between the cylinder and the barrel, so some of that is going to come out through that direction. But if you go to wash your hands, you have the same, you know, you're curing the problem the same way. You obviously, regardless of the type of firearm, you don't want to be touching your face and, you know, anything where you have openings that your body could absorb it through softer tissues. Let me ask you a question. Would you and your son and maybe a couple other folks be interested in a trip to the fair at New Boston? It's at George Rogers Clark on the weekend, August 31st and September 1st.
August 31st, September 1st.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
The fair at New Boston. It's at George Rogers Clark Park. It's out towards Springfield. And if you would be interested in going out there, we have a set of tickets available for you.
Sure.
All right. Well, you just stay on the line, and we'll get you connected into Mike Kane, our producer, and he will take that information. Thanks very much for calling the show. Let's go back out to the phone and talk to Paul, who's calling from Kettering. Paul, welcome to the show.
Yes, gentlemen. Hey, thanks for the show. It's awesome.
Thank you.
Hey, got a question in regards to concealed carry holsters.
Okay.
I guess your preference as far as comfort and concealability.
Well, as far as comfort, it's going to come down to the individual. And I want to tell you the more critical issue is functionality and how much you're going to practice. And just this past week, the issue came up. We were running our handgun 3 class, and we had people who have the Blackhawk Serpa holster, which has a button that you have to depress that's at the perfect location for when you're indexing your finger along the side of the gun. As you go to draw your gun, it's at that perfect location. You push it in and draw the pistol. That individual, prior to coming to the series of classes, had always used a top snap thumb brake holster, and he came to class on at least 10 occasions he double clutched and couldn't get his gun out of the holster. Now the point I want to bring up was both of them are high quality holsters, the first one being either a double loop or triple loop pancake style holster with a thumb brake retention snap on the top, and then the Serpa holster are both great holsters, but because he hadn't practiced with it, it wasn't right for him. Now, in addition to the practice, it's going to come down to comfort, and Mark and I are great examples. I prefer outside the waistband holsters because I have enough to tuck inside the waistband as it is, so I don't want anything else inside the waistband. Mark, on the other hand, not as hefty as me.
Well,
feels more comfortable. Feels more comfortable with a crossbreed Super Tuck inside the waistband, and that's what he uses. So I think all the good quality holsters that are out there are manufactured to high specifications and high standards, and they do very well. But the critical issue is going to be your comfort, and that can depend on your clothing and attire. That can depend on, you know, where you're going. If you're going to be sitting in the car for a prolonged period of time, you're going to be standing. And then it's going to come down to what you've practiced with, so that when you need it in a critical situation, you can access it. So there's a lot of issues kind of loaded into your question, and I hope I don't confuse you more than help getting you to think and get the rest of the listening audience to think about the issues that go into holster selection.
One of the things that took me to trying an inside the waistband holster, because I have the same girth issues that Jeff does, but I had lost some weight some years ago, and I just tried one, and it's got a leather pad on it. It's very similar to the crossbreeds that we have at the range, and now there's several others that are available, and far more holsters are now available than there used to be. We have an 8-squared holsters as well that have the similar kind of a pad between you and the gun, and it was the fact that I did have a little extra room. You do need about 2 extra inches, so if you're going to just go inside the waistband and your pants just fit now, you're going to need to get some new pants and a new belt with an extra couple of inches, one size larger. And that will give you enough room for that. But the advantage of it is you can tuck in a shirt around the holster between the gun and the pants, and then you don't really even look like there's anything on your belt except for the little clip that hangs over. So I find it to be easy to conceal. The leather makes it very comfortable, and you don't have to adjust your clothing. So sometimes if I have to go dressed a little bit more formally with shirt tucked in, then that'll be the way. But I like outside the waistband too, and have one, and I do practice with both, and that's the key.
Paul, let me ask you, which were you leaning? What style or design were you leaning towards?
I was leaning actually toward a inside the belt.
Okay. Well, what gun are you carrying?
That's a little Sky 9mm.
Okay, so it's
2 years.
It's a relatively... It's a small to medium-sized semi-automatic pistol, and there's plenty of holsters out there that will be designed specific for that. Now, you got to understand, too, we have people that sometimes say that, well, this is made for small automatics, and it's even though it says it's for a Glock, it fits my whatever. Well, I want to discourage that, because when they say it's for a Glock, that's what it's for. And remember, when they custom fit those for the specific guns, they're making those tolerances for the gun that it's made for versus other ones that might be similar but not identical, so it could cause a problem in a stressful situation. So as far as you're concerned, the Sky is it's a gun that hasn't gotten a whole lot of popularity, but it's had some degree of success in getting into the market. So you're going to have to ask specifically whether it's DeSantis or Stoner or Goulden Goodrich or Crossbreed or Nate Squared, whatever the manufacturer, and they're all pretty darn good. Ask them specifically for the model holster or holsters for your gun and try them. One way to do that is you could come to or go to a retail establishment. I can just tell you, we don't have hardly any Skies in circulation at Sim Trainer, so I don't stock those on a regular basis. But any place that has an abundant supply of holsters, as long as you make sure before you go there you have a unloaded weapon, they might, after you ask them and then you have them check to make sure the gun is unloaded in a safe manner, they might let you try a couple holsters to see what you like. Okay, so that's one option.
And the other thing is that several of the manufacturers that do mail order business will also give you a guarantee that if for some reason you try that and it doesn't work for you, that you can return it. And I know that Crossbreed has that. I think Nate Squared does that, but I'm not absolutely sure. But that's another way that you can find out if there's a holster that works for you. Paul, thanks very much for calling the show. Let's go out and talk to Leon, who's calling from West Carrollton. Leon, welcome to the show.
Hello, fellas. I'm sitting parked in my car and talking on OnStar here, not driving. It's fun to speculate, and we can speculate without prejudice, politics, or hate. The Zimmerman incident has a lot of lessons. Now, George Zimmerman might have profiled Trayvon Martin, but Trayvon Martin might have profiled George Zimmerman. George Zimmerman might have looked like a weak target. And to some people, it's fun to beat up weak people unless they've got a knife or a gun. So this might save some lives people might think before they attack a weak target from now on.
Well, then again, I agree with the premise that criminals need to be on notice that weak targets may not be so weak, but I don't want to at all promote the agenda that we're assuming that Trayvon Martin thought George Zimmerman was a weak target, because we don't know that, and I don't even want to go down that road. I see where you're coming from.
Speculate,
right? Sure, I totally understand that. But
and
you're perfectly welcome to do that. But we don't normally speculate. Jeff and I we try real hard to stick to the facts that we can know and prove or pull out of the testimony.
I said may have.
I understand.
Sure. We just have to clarify that, and I just like to mention that the facts as we know them in the Zimmerman case indicated that George Zimmerman acted in self-defense, in defense of his life in that particular case. And all the other speculation, just I think it goes down roads that it's certainly good for discussion, and actually interesting for a discussion. I don't know, it's always good. Interesting for discussion and debate, but we try to avoid that where we're involved, because we try to seek the truth and report facts as we know them.
Well, this is why a lot of women are taking these CCW classes now. They're tired of being weak targets.
Yeah, now, there you have a factual statement. Not only they're tired about it, but we tell them they should not have to be. They should not have to feel any more intimidated than we feel when we walk out in the street at night or whenever the case is. And the gun is an equalizer in many cases, and it gives them power. And Mark refers so often to Kathy at the Cornered Cat website.
Kathy Jackson, yeah.
Kathy Jackson, and she makes that very clear that empowering women through making them responsible for their own safety and giving them the confidence really does a lot of good for women and in their belief system about this whole issue of self-defense.
Leon, thanks very much for calling the show. We need to take our last break for the hour, so if you'd like to be part of the show, and we do have a couple of calls still on the line, you can call the studio at 457-1290. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Rachel Parsons, spokesperson for the National Rifle Association, and you're on Shooting from the Hip on News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro, and we still have an awful lot of material we'd like to cover in a very short period of time. So let's go right out to the phones and talk with Dan, who's calling from Dayton. Dan, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Love the show. I know you're short on time, so I just got a quick question about ammunition.
All right.
I just recently bought some Hornady Critical Duty 135 grain plus P ammo, and on the box it says for law enforcement only.
What caliber? Is that 9mm?
9mm,
okay.
Yes.
It's not a requirement that it be only law enforcement. What it really means, it's law enforcement use, and that was the design purpose, and that's exactly why you're using it, because they're trying to stop a threat as the same way that you would. So,
right, exactly.
Yeah, there is no, at least not in Ohio, there's no problem with using any of that type of ammo. In some places like New Jersey, where you're not allowed to have certain types of ammunition, that might be a problem. But that's certainly not a problem in Ohio. It's very effective, and we've seen it tested. It's pretty effective.
Google searching and can come up with anything definitive. So
enforcement prime to assembly just because of availability.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks to Arthur, who's calling from Piqua. Arthur, welcome to the show. How can we help you today?
Hey, Jeff and Mark, how you guys doing?
Excellent. We've got just a short period of time. Can we answer a question for you?
Yeah, real quick, Mark. I live in a second upstairs story apartment and everything. Can I step out on my deck without a concealed carry weapon?
You mean without a license?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I'm not stepping on the grounds or anything. I'm just stepping out outside having a smoke in front of my door.
And the deck, I assume the deck is covered?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's not exactly covered. It's open air.
Yeah, probably the best answer for that in terms of legally is open carry. You are allowed to carry concealed in your residence, and then a deck that's outdoors is a kind of a gray area that's not specifically addressed in the law. It may not be a problem, and it could be, and we'd hate for you to be the test case.
Yeah,
kind of. Yeah, that's something that we try to avoid as much as possible. We do know for a fact that open carry would be legal, and that's probably your best bet. So you know, just take the shirt and tuck it on the other side of the gun, what we used to call the Buckeye tuck back when you had to have open carry in your automobile, and that should solve the problem. Arthur, thanks very much for calling the show.
A couple things I want to remind our listeners of. We still have several openings in our September 14th and 15th concealed carry class. So if you'd like to get enrolled in that class, please call the range or go ahead and register online, because that class will fill up very quickly. Again, it's a concealed carry class on Saturday and Sunday, September 14th and 15th, and there are several openings in that class. I also want to alert our listeners to a Smith & Wesson consumer safety alert that was just issued this last week relative to the Smith & Wesson M&P Shield firearm. We have links to that consumer safety alert that Smith & Wesson just issued on both our Facebook page and on our homepage.
Up at sim-trainer.com, I put a big alert on the left-hand side of the page.
So. And I want to encourage you, if you have a Smith & Wesson M&P Shield, please go to that and follow the protocol to the T, including making sure you triple check to make sure the gun's empty before you do the test to see if your gun is going to be affected by that potential recall. But please take an opportunity to look at that that alert and see if it applies to you.
We'll also have a copy of that down at the range. So if you have a Smith & Wesson and you're a member of the range, probably the safest place to do that test is actually in a stall. Point with a gun, keep it pointed down range. But the information on that is pretty critical. It's something they just discovered and released this week. So any gun manufactured before this week, it could apply to. And so it's very important that you test it.
I also wanted to mention that we've made reference to the publication Preventing Gun Violence Through Effective Messaging that the anti-gun community is pretty much using as their Bible on how to attack their agenda or how to promote their agenda. And I want to direct your attention, or at least have you encourage you to go see the Buckeye Firearms website, the most recent information and articles relative to Jim Irvine's kind of overview of this document. He does a great job of summarizing what is actually 80 or 90 pages in about two or three pages, where he pretty much takes most of the major arguments they promote and things such as, you know, rely on when the NRA goes silent waiting for facts before they comment, use that time to go ahead and rely on emotion and the victim's tragedy and try to promote your agenda. So there's some pretty underhanded techniques that are promoted here, and quite frankly, it's appalling. Anybody looking at this with even a neutral mindset would say that I've got some concerns about that approach. But if you have Mark's made the link available on our website if you want to read the entire document. But if you go to Jim Irvine's commentary, an overview of the article or of the journal, he does a great job of dissecting it pretty much section by section and just talking about the ridiculousness of some of the things they're promoting.
Thanks very much for being a part of the show today. We are out of time. We'll be glad for you to join us next week. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290 News Talk Radio WHIO.